On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
He really is a master trainer of stayers, and even the way he wants to adjust the programming of racing in Victoria to reflect a better platform into the spring.
Lakeside has always been a track that plays towards horses that sit on the speed, but with that wind, the southwesterly that blew up, it was still made it near impossible for horses to run on.
A lot of people suppose saying, let's make it the greatest weekend ever, have the Derby and the Grand Final. I don't like that because I know how much oxygen that's going to take out of racing.
Of all the horses in Australia right now, which one has the most ability and the most scope? It's Russian Catalan.
All the conversation beforehand was going well, super, flying, in great form. As somebody on the outside, and remember, most punters were dealing with information from 2 weeks ago when we were having a bet. You've got to be guided by that.
World of the triple place parlay, there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
Welcome to The Verdict with Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey. Matty Stewart is here. How are you, Matty?
I'm well. There isn't a car on the road and Shark can't get here on time. It's note to self, note to management looming.
He better be bringing fish because I reckon he's jumped out in the tinny and thrown a line in this morning to try and catch something. But he's running late. He lives 10 minutes away from the Beaumaris studio.
Let's just see what creative excuse he can come up with in about 20 minutes' time.
How was the weekend, Matty? Plenty of news. We're going to have a chat to Rob Heathcote in a moment. And also, plenty of good racing over the weekend. How was it for you? It was tough on Saturday.
It was tough because it was just, we'd never seen Flemington like that, not for a long time. I mean, they were coming in like Brown's cows. Everyone you spoke to said like it was just tough work, and Matt Hill sort of got that message across in his calls as well. So I found it tough. I found it as tough as horses like Shepherd found it. It's nice. It's sort of refreshing to see old school winter racing, though, wasn't it? We're so used to seeing good tracks in the off season, but it was almost like 1985 watching Flemington on a heavy track. So Queensland was interesting. Obviously, the big talking point is Canaan, which we'll discuss when Shark gets here. The jumps yesterday was good. I know Amy McDonald didn't win the big steeplechase, but she did have an early winner and ran second with Shamal. I think the rise of Amy McDonald as a jumps trainer and Lee Horner, of course, is a nice story. So, yeah, lots to... Rich Charm wasn't that fantastic that he just missed it.
For Mrs. Clark, it was going to get up at about the 150. A great training performance to get him back as well. And the same, we spoke on Saturday morning about Matt Laurie's effort with Alpha Aura. Gee, that was a tough one. I don't think he handled the wet. He looked gone about five times, but his class and toughness got him through.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Dean yesterday talk about how he felt the horse just got lost up the straight and how Mellum deliberately held the horse back to be a bit social, so he sort of had a bit of company and then didn't get clear air until he absolutely needed it, and then the horse got the wobbles. So was it Dean or one of the other guys was mentioning how great a trainer Matt Laurie is at getting horses back to form after an issue and stringing wins together. Like, he's a real picket fence trainer. They win their maiden on the Friday night at Cranbourne, then they win again. So he's a master at getting that little picket fence with horses that have had setbacks. So, worth keeping in mind if you're a punter.
A lot to discuss. We want to talk about... Did you watch the international racing yesterday afternoon? A brilliant battle between Joe Marrera and Zach Purton. Four winners each. I think they're equal on 123 winners for the season. They're 53 clear of Karis Tienen, who is the third in the premiership. It's an amazing battle.
It is an amazing battle, and there was that issue yesterday where Zach got tossed out the back of the gates, and then he came out and won on Exultant, who he's another interesting Hong Kong champion, Exultant, isn't
Five
he?
Group ones.
Yeah, he's just serviceable for me. Like, he's not one of the greats of Hong Kong, but he's the best stayer at the moment, who's got a terrific record.
Don't like any of those Hong Kong horses.
No, I do. I don't want it to sound like that. But and I'll tell you what's remarkable about him is, did you see him parade in the mounting yard? He's just a nothing horse to look at. He is absolute mystery of how he can translate into being a five-time Group 1 winner. So, no, it's the jockey battle is what excites me most about Hong Kong at the moment.
Who are you with?
I don't have an allegiance personally. I think they're both great jockeys, and I'd like to see either win. I'm happy to see it go to the wire without speculating on it too much. Hang on. Look, he's
we'll try
look
and catch up with Zach Purton the next day or two. The cat's just dragged in the shark. We'll get the headphones on him in a moment. But the big talking point was the bombshell from Rob Heathcote, and ironically, it was after a bomb scare on Saturday at the races on at Eagle Farm. Before we talk to Rob, How do you think the track played up there on Saturday? There's been a lot of discussion before it, and we might as well talk about Kanane as well, because he was the horse that we all wanted to talk about and watch on Saturday. As we say good afternoon to Mick Sharkey. How are you, Shark?
Gentlemen. Where are the flathead tails?
Well, I better turn you on. Are you there, Shark?
I wish it was fishing related.
You've had a tough morning?
Well, some mornings with three young children go smoother than others. And let's just say getting young Daisy out of bed this morning required an unexpected costume change from yours truly.
What, she only gets up if you're wearing something weird?
She may have soiled.
Things are a little messy.
Soiled.
Sorry. Costume. I thought you meant you had to have a costume change.
No. Tried to do the right thing and let my wife have a sleep in. Well, it backfired. Literally backfired.
And to everyone out there who is counting down to tomorrow, who have children returning to school, congratulations on making it through homeschooling. Yeah, for those who are lucky enough to have one in prep to grade two, as we are. Tomorrow is a great day. What about Kanane? Sharky, I'll ask you. A lot of social media traction on Saturday about the run. Was it below par?
Hard to win coming from last. Standing leaders, a massive head start like that. And I think they probably underestimated the ability of Supergiant to a degree. He's a pretty strong on pace horse. And when he was let get out and bowl along like that, you could see the margins opening up on the rest of the field. It was a bold ride on Kanane to suggest that he'd be able to make up that much ground.
Did he have any other option, or were you not happy with the ride? Because he's drawn the car park in an awkward start point.
You don't want to be one of those hindsighters that says, oh, well, you know, he was a month between runs and this and that. No, he's vulnerable. I backed the horse. But when he went back to last, I thought, well, I've probably done my day here, really.
At the start that he was going to have to be ridden conservatively.
Yeah, absolutely. I probably didn't expect him last, to be fair. I thought he might be able to be worse than midfield, but, you know, not last. When he settled last, it was game over.
Well, what I think they have done and they've had to do is block out the other story, the 2.8 million. Block out the fact that they could have taken the money, but they didn't, and they've rolled the dice.
How do you
everyone's
block that out?
Hey?
How do you block that out?
Well, because in order to program an improving, immature, rising, staying horse, you've got to go with the horse and not the desperate need to win every time to make sense of the decision. So I was talking to Peter Moody about it yesterday. He said, oh, mate, barrier 18 at the 1800 at Eagle Farm. If you go back, you need to be Burnborough with wings, you know. So
it's not to say that run means they're not justified in knocking back the 2.8 either. It was I don't think that was a grand final race. You should roll around in that rough avenue.
I'd like to be on him in the next... his next start. I thought it was a good run. I didn't like the tail swishing, but I thought it was a good run.
He's a month between runs.
2,200.
And he's under pressure.
If they put him up a decent price next start, you want to be on him.
But I think what they're looking at is not even the next run. They're looking at this immature project and they're thinking 2 years. What can we do with this horse in the next 2 years? He's a gelding. So all these hysterical overreactions to him getting rolled. I mean, he may get rolled again next start. He may take this spring to furnish. He may become a really nice horse in the autumn, and then suddenly in 3 years' time he might have $3.4 million in stakes if his career goes right through the roof. So that's what's so fascinating about this whole story is you've got the money or the box scenario. They took the box in inverted commas, but it's not going to deliver. It's not going to be an immediate delivery.
So would you still be comfortable sitting there if you were the owners after Saturday?
I would have sold it in an instant.
Yeah,
I would have too. Oh, yeah, absolutely. People said they were mad for not selling Nature Strip when the massive money was coming for him early doors. And
what were
his
they
earnings
offered
sitting
for Nature Strip?
I think it was around $2 million.
It's probably a bit different with the prize money on the table for sprinters, horses like him, than what there are for the stakes.
At the time, the Everest didn't exist.
Didn't it?
There's actually more money in staying races, but if you can get the right sort of horse, you know. So that's why Black Caviar wasn't our top earner.
Yeah, in Black Caviar's day, there wasn't an Everest back then, though.
Yeah, but only one horse can win the Everest.
Well, yeah, but there's only one else can win a Melbourne Cup.
That's true too.
Take the money.
But, you know, but it's not as simple as I would have sold it, because it's not just one owner. That was the other thing that needs to be explained a bit, is why didn't they take the money? Well, there were a lot of different owners with different financial positions.
And it was a lock, stock and barrel. You couldn't have a percentage of the horse staying in. The owner in Hong Kong or the buyer wanted 100%.
Well, you also can't stay in up there because you need to be a registered owner with a permit in Hong Kong to race, so you can't an Aussie can't just race a random horse there.
The other feature on Saturday was Rothfire. We might talk about that first with Rob Heathcote, and then we'll have a chat about his comments yesterday on RaceNet. Interesting article by Ben Dorries. But Rothfire, it was considered a two-horse race between the two local stars, and Rothfire came out on top.
Rothfire's a length and a half clear. Wild Ruler tries. Isotope down the outside. Rothfire by length and a half. Wild Ruler can't get there. Isotope tries also, but Rothfire's in front. Wild Ruler and also Isotope, they won't get to Rothfire. And Rothfire is too hot on the champagne. Rothfire wins. Seconds a photo between Wild Ruler and Isotope, followed by Bayless and Cookerata.
It was a dominant display by Rothfire. Rob Heathcote would have been a very happy man on Saturday because he's got the best two-year-old, I think, in Queensland racing, heading towards the JJ Atkins. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, lads. Just listening to you earlier while I was on hold, I got offered $1 million for Buckling when he'd won $400,000 and knocked it back and he went on and won 7.3. So I know he won that round.
Just a quick one on that. What did you, as an independent observer, what did you make of the performance of Canane in the Gun's End?
Yeah, a little disappointing. Bear in mind, guys, he had to be vetted pre-race. I think there was an incident on the float trip on the way to the track, whether he got down in his float or something, but something did happen. And whenever that happens, you know, you've always got to, you know, give a horse a pretty big excuse mark if they fail. But, you know, whilst he vetted sound to race, he just didn't look comfortable. He never travelled. His horse head was up in the air. And, you know, he's better than that. I'm sure of that.
Gee, your horse travelled throughout. What happened last start, Rob? Because he could have had a picket fence next to his name. Whatever it was, the improvement between that start and Saturday was immense.
I think the main thing, Nick, is the Gold Coast. I mean, I make no secret that it's a tricky track and a lot of horses fail on that track down there. And I use the analogy on Saturday, the best two-year-old in the land got beat at the Gold Coast, Farman. I think he's unbeaten except once, Gold Coast. You know, and my fella's the same. So it can do that. You look closely at that run in the Gold Coast Duel. He was dipping and diving and changing strides most of the way and still managed to run second and put lengths on, you know, the rest of the field. So he's clearly a horse with a lot of ability and he beat a couple of pretty good ones on Saturday, I think.
This Atkins Stakes, your $4 favourite, and this is in a fortnight's time, Isotope still lingering in the market at $5. $6 Wisdom of Water, who's been spectacular. Peltzer, who was terrific.
And I don't think it's going, though.
Okay, it's in the market at $8, and then it goes down. I know this isn't as glamorous or as rich as the Golden Slipper, but I'd be interested in, after this race is run, what the ratings guys make of it, because these late comers, these two-year-olds, are all pretty good, aren't they, Rob?
Matt, from day one, I've had my enthusiasm's been buoyed by a guy you'd know, Daniel O'Sullivan. I've never met Daniel, but he's a bit of a ratings guru. He rated Rothfire right up there from early days, and I'm like questioning it, why? And he even had him very short, well, his ratings had him short in the market for the Golden Slipper, and I questioned that. But they've got a system, and on Saturday it proved it as well. Rothfire winning, he actually ran quicker than the Group 2 Victory Stakes on Saturday, the Open Company Sprint. Mm. So I think there's a correlation in time and also how they do their ratings. So, you know, so far he's got his rating spot on, I think.
So your own experience was sort of, O'Sullivan's opinion was sort of more influential than your feel for Rothfire. You've had a lot of good horses, but you didn't quite see what he was seeing?
Oh, no, I get to see it every day at track work, and particularly when we open the throttle a bit. I knew he was pretty good. I went into that race on Saturday, Matt, with, you know, some apprehension, primarily because, you know, we've had a revised carnival schedule up here and the carnival was cancelled and it was 3 weeks before we had an announcement that there are still going to be some feature races. I was probably a fortnight behind the eight ball. And he'd only had the one jump out, and first up over 1,200 metres, first day back at Eagle Farm, big long straight, testing 1,200. I thought he might have been a little bit vulnerable late, but, you know, to the horse's credit, he over-raced a touch early, but Jimmy said once he established the lead, he came back to him. He travelled sweetly for a furlong and a half, but when he gave him a squeeze, he gave him a really, really good kick, and And he was quite bullish after the race. He reckons he'll get 1,400, no worries.
Rob, you made some comments with Matt on Friday, I think, Thursday or Friday, about the state of the Eagle Farm track and its troubles in the last couple of years. How did you see the track play on Saturday? They seem to use a fair bit of it.
Mick, you're generous. Last couple of years, try about 5.5. It's been a bit of a nightmare for us up here, but I've got to say on Saturday, I thought it raced really well. You know, he chopped out a little bit from the 600 around into the home straight, but they had a swarm of divot stompers out there, 18 of them, and I think visually the track looked okay on the day. The riders I spoke to said it gave a nice feel, perhaps the top being just a little bit soft and then underneath that quite firm. It's an unusual track, this sand profile track, but in the main, horses led and won. Horses came on the fence and won. They came down the outside and they come from back in the field and won. So, look, I thought the track played fair and had a bit of a look at it this morning, and it's recovered quite well.
Well, that's good to hear for the future big meetings coming up. And Rob, yesterday Ben Dorries wrote an article on RaceNet, which you've been quoted in, as has Kelly Schweder and also Brian and Daniel Guy and Desley Forster. Now, some of the biggest names in Queensland racing, and for someone like yourself who's been one of the most successful trainers up there, some pretty strong comments. You're quoted as saying, "I compete and watch a lot of racing in Queensland and I see so many things which defy logic. I am certain it's not clean here and it is possibly the worst it has been since I came into racing in 1997. The importance of integrity in racing can never be overstated and this current situation is an epic fail." Now, you wouldn't say something like that lightly, Rob. That's a big comment that you know is going to get a big reaction. What's prompted you to come out and say this publicly?
Well, we wanted a big reaction, Michael, because we've got an unusual model up here. It's a different racing model than the rest of Australia in that we have a commission here that's not really run by Racing Queensland. It's run by an independent body, which is set up by, it's run by the commissioner, who's a former assistant police commissioner, and his investigative unit. In the main are generally police officers, and it's been in operation for 4 or 5 years, and we haven't made these comments lightly because we want to pick a fight with Keurig. Really, all we want is confidence restored to the industry, because that's what racing is all about. It's all about confidence. And, you know, the commissioner in his reply to our comments just says that, you know, puts a spin on it that cheating will always be part of the racing industry. And as risk grows, as prize money increases, we're doing more than ever before. Well, in these last 2 or 3 months, guys, there's been so many race meetings, there has been zero pre-race testing. I mean zero. And word has got out...
Virus-related?
Sorry?
Is that related to the coronavirus, just the inability for testers to get around and do their job? Is that related to that?
Maybe, Matt. Maybe. But even before then, it's something that, you know, you have to understand the mechanics of cheating to a degree, particularly tubing a horse, administering an alkalising agent pre-race. Once the horse is raced, the evidence is burned off. So really what we want to see, and at the end of the day, we all understand the fuel that drives the industry. It's wagering. I'm not talking prize money here for industry participants. I'm talking that age-old saying, Matt, and you know it, money lost, nothing lost, confidence lost, everything lost. And we are hearing across the board, not just from trainers, from owners, from industry participants, but even, you know, very, very long-serving members in the racing industry, from media personnel to even former stewards and, dare I say, and I'm certainly not going to say the names, but even current stewards today that are so frustrated with what's been going on. And I take on board the comments of Ross Barnett, the commissioner. He's going to put a spin on it, that they're doing a wonderful job, that they're doing so many thousands of tests. But like, for example, a comment, most participants play by the rule in racing, as evidenced by the low number of positives compared to the thousands of tests. Well, so because you're not catching cheats, it means nobody's cheating. That's what they said about Lance Armstrong for 7 years. That's what they said about the Aquanita scandal in Melbourne. So every effort must be made, in our opinion, to restore confidence to us in the industry that there's far more pre-race testing, and I'm talking the $5,000 maiden at Gatton right through to the group race at Eagle Farm. There is simply, because at the end of the day, guys, and you're all experts at it, you're form students, you study form. And when form gets turned on its head for whatever reason, it diminishes confidence in the wagering industry.
But form aside, this is completely damning of Keurig. If you, Rob, as one of the biggest trainers and most successful trainers in the state, are amongst a host of others saying you've got no confidence in the integrity process, Mr. Barnett can't just fob it off as, oh, we're doing our best and we're testing. But this sounds like there's a significant overhaul needs to happen immediately.
100%. And that's what we believe. And Mr. Barnett is going to defend his commission, saying they're doing a great job. But we don't believe they are. I would like, here in Queensland, we have an unusual model, not just with the Integrity Commission, but can you imagine one person, maybe Volandis could, but one person being in charge of soccer, football, NRL and rugby? Well, that's what we have up here. Our racing is all joined together, greyhound racing, harness racing and thoroughbred. They're three completely different codes. I believe, and I'm not on my own, that the codes should be separated and allowed to run themselves. And the integrity of each of the codes should be placed in the hands of experts with years and years of experience. And if we don't have that experience, then source it from right across the country. I mean, there are stewards talk to me now, current working stewards, that are so frustrated with what's going on. So it is a situation that we would like to see action. It's an election year. This commission was set up, and this model was set up after the greyhound scandal. Remember the live baiting scandal, guys, back in 2015? Well, because of the McSporran report that was put out after, 23 recommendations were made. The Labor government of the day instituted 22 of them. Who did they put in charge of integrity? The steward who was in charge of greyhounds that started it all. So that shows you the ludicrousy of that situation then. And we've got a situation now where confidence has been seriously eroded in the whole state.
So it sounds like you're suggesting we go back to the old system. I'm assuming that the old system in Queensland was, as you described, each code had its own specialised stewards and they weren't as detached as you're suggesting Keurig is from the day-to-day stuff that's going on. Is that what you're suggesting? Let's go back to the more traditional stewarding model where every code has its own expertise with stewards and so on. And just on top of that as well, are you suggesting that TCO2 is running rampant in Queensland at the moment? Is that basically the issue?
Yes, 100%. TCO2, tubing horses. But Mr. Barnett makes the comment that if you've got any evidence of people tubing a horse, then let us know. If you don't pass on this information, you have no right to criticise the lack of action. Well, that's an absurd comment to make.
Mm.
But what I'd like to see, go back to 2015. We had a steward here, the chief steward, Wade Birch. I believe was one of the best stewards we've ever had. He got sacked. And he's down. He's lost to Racing New South Wales. I mean, we've got a new steward here. He's a lovely guy, Peter Chadwick. But I actually think, and this is a personal observation of mine and some of my colleagues, his hands are tied. I mean, even Keurig here, when they do catch cheats, they're so often tied up in the legal system with QCAT that it goes on for months and months, in some cases, years, guys. There's so many cases up here at the moment that are on the back burner. It's just out of control.
We can hear your frustration, Rob, and obviously there's plenty of others up there who feel this sense of frustration. What's the viewpoint of Racing Queensland? Are they in agreeance with you, even though they don't have any say in the matter? Would they like to see it come back under their control?
Sadly, Michael, you've hit the nail on the head. They don't have any say in the matter because they're probably too frightened to say anything because they'll lose their jobs. Mm. Our racing in Queensland, for I've been in racing for 23 years up here, and we've been a political football for all of those 23 years, and we are now. I mean, heaven forbid for our CEO to have to come out and make a comment on what he thinks about it, because you'd have to take the position of the government. Simple as that. We're losing
You mentioned it's an election year. If Labor loses power up there, I'm not au fait with, you know, what Palaszczuk's ratings are. Would Curate be disbanded? Is that what you're hoping for? Is there a chance of a change of government?
Well, I'm hoping so. I mean, that's a personal viewpoint of mine. I haven't had any communication from the Liberal National Party on what their goals would do, but seeing as the election's 4 or 5 months away, this is an issue that has to be addressed. But quite simply, like I said early on, I don't want this to be a personal stanging match or a bashing match against the Commissioner Ross Barnett. If they can get and assure us there's going to be maximum effort put into TCO2 testings pre-race, right across the board from all racing venues, I want to get back to a situation like it was when I first came into racing, when I had esteemed stewards like Steve Railton and Reed Sanders. He was so, so vigilant. And there's been Alan Reed and a whole host of stewards who were so vigilant all the time and commanded such respect from within the industry, respect which sadly at the moment has waned. And I'd just like to see racing as clean as it could possibly be and have confidence restored to us all.
Well, Rob, I think there'll be a lot of people that say kudos to you for speaking out so strongly publicly as well. And I must admit, I had a look at the response from Ross Barnett, and I was surprised by some of the responses that he's basically not taking on board what you've had to say, that it's a pure defence of Keurig. I think any time any leading trainers have issues, whether it's believed or not by the integrity department, they need to come together and try and work things out
Matt, in Singapore, oh, Johnny Ma, he was up there for a while. You walk a horse onto the course in Singapore, they do a test of it straight away. If you're above 33 or 34, which is considered higher than average, take your horse back home, you're scratched. Simple as that.
Well, that's it.
You've got to take action. You've got to let the industry know that we are here to stop you breaking the rules. And you don't necessarily have to break the prohibited substance rule of 36 millimoles per millilitre of blood, of TCO2. But if you're close to it, you've already broken the rule in 99.9% of the time to have that level, because it has to be administered within 24 hours. And that's veterinary science. That's just not my opinion.
Rob, appreciate your time this morning. We'll try and get Ross Barnett on to respond tomorrow and put some of the questions that you've raised directly to him as well. We'll follow the story as it unfolds. And good luck with Rothfire as well.
Good on you guys. Always a pleasure. I hope to see you in the spring with you.
Yeah, so do we. Good on you, mate.
There's so many. One thing they did do, and it was Terry Bailey was sort of in two minds about this, and they had done it in harness racing, was the publishing of every horse's resting TCO2 level. So if they're cheating and they're under, you can't necessarily nab them, but the peer group pressure advice. The exposure of the fact that they are obviously cheating is a bit of a self-regulator. And I interviewed Hayden Haitana once many years ago for the anniversary of Fine Cotton, and found him in Goolwar, and we're talking about what had been going on in Queensland racing in that previous era of the 1970s and 80s and early 1990s, and it was mind-boggling, the sort of creativity of the rorting up in Queensland. And just as Rob Heathcote was talking about that, and this is not a disparaging comment against Queenslanders per se, there has always been a cultural issue in Queensland throughout the last 100 years of a propensity to push your luck. It's been a very Queensland racing thing, a little bit more in my experience than maybe the other jurisdictions.
Well, it's a huge state. Mm. They've got the most amount of racetracks from Picnic through to Metro. So it's obviously a difficult state for the compliance people to try and cover very, very closely. But just a snapshot of what Ross Barnett had to say in reply on RaceNet yesterday. This article was from Ben Dorries. He said, complaints that certain trainers are cheating are constant from within the racing industry and are often made by other trainers. The Commission established the Report Something portal in June 2018 to encourage the public and industry to report any mistreatment of racing animals or wrongdoing within the industry. More than 75% of the non-anonymous reports received through the portal are directly from racing industry. industry participants. There is so much industry gossip, innuendo, suspicion and scepticism, which is not evidence. If trainers have information about cheating they want investigated, they can speak to me personally in total confidence, as occurs from time to time. If they don't pass on the information, then they have no right to criticise a lack of action.
It's almost like they're saying we don't have to police it. Yeah, you just tell us if there's a problem.
It's a terrible statement.
You tell us who's doing it, and then we'll go and look into it. What about the people that are in charge of policing it get resourced properly or get directed to go and do more extensive tests? And on your point, Mick, about the it's a big state and it's difficult, that they can't, surely they can't use that as an excuse either. There's difficulties in every job, doesn't matter what your job is. You don't make excuses about it. You find a way to solve those problems and work around those difficulties and get the job done.
And there seemed to be almost an acceptance that cheating would occur. Like the really strong commissioners and, you know, the chief, they have a zero tolerance policy. It's almost like, and I'm not saying this is what he believes, but this is what it sounded like reading that he has a casual acceptance that things will go on underneath his watch and that there's not much I can do about it unless you come in with it and put the evidence on my table.
Yeah, well, we'll try and get Ross Bone out on the show tomorrow, but it is a big story in Queensland racing, broken by Ben Dorries on RaceNet. Yesterday, a few SMSs coming through before we take a quick break. A few saying that good on Rob, he's a straight shooter if nothing else. Yeah. Good on him for bringing it to the public. Arena Canane, his bad style will stop him from reaching the heights. Head high, tail swishes under pressure. He's not a one-off like Northerly. That's from Ted.
Had he done that before, though?
I hadn't seen him swish his tail
before.
Yeah,
so let's not just say that's the horse. You know, under duress, a month between runs. You know, there are reasons sometimes why horses can, not find as much as you'd expect under pressure or behave a certain way under pressure.
Rod and Strathmore saying he's not seasoned enough to be a factor for the Cups. He'll probably have a light spring and be prepared for the autumn.
Well, one of the reasons why they knocked back the 2.8, that's worth putting a bit of context, is because there was a belief that the internationals might not be coming, so the horse's potential to earn might be greater.
Yep.
But what's with the short-term view? Like next year he'll be an even better horse. I think that comment's right. He may not be a Cup source this year, but that's not the end of the world either.
And I like this one. Marty, how was your three place all up on Saturday? Not getting that third leg always sucks. That's from Tony. How are you, Marty?
Yes. Thank you, Anthony, for the message. I'm struggling with them now. I got a bit cock-a-hoop and carried away, and I thought they were easy, and now I'm just getting bashed around the head by my three-place parlays.
All right. We'll have more tales of woe from Matty Stewart after the break. You're listening to The Verdict. Keep the SMSs coming through. Plenty more to discuss on the other side of this.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Exultant leads a length and a half on Schifano, Furore in Savvy 9. Exultant, he's out on his feet, but he still leads a length. Schifano, Furore, they're trying to get him. Exultant kicking over Schifano, Furore, Exultant in front. It's the high five of Group 1's Exultant. Beat Schifano and Furore.
Exultant winning his fifth Group 1. Zach Purton, another Group 1. Sharky, Matt and I discussed it at the top of the show, but the battle between Purton and Marrera, absolutely fascinating over there in Hong Kong.
It is. It's a great watch, isn't it? And week to week, that you can see they're half trying it. They're outdoing each other every race. They want that edge. The riding is elite, as you'd expect in that jurisdiction. But you can't deny Exultant is pretty serious horse. I know Hong Kong's not known for their staying horses.
Matty doesn't think he's any good.
I said he looks like a runt, but he's a good horse.
He's so strong. For a horse it is, he's quite, you know, he's not a big powerhouse. Mm, he's quite fine. He is so strong. Devil's advocate, could he come here and make an impact in a cup?
Say a Cox Plate, right?
He's pretty good.
Small
pool, though, isn't it? They're staying horses.
How have your efforts to entice good horses out of Hong Kong been in the last few years?
Disaster.
With Bubble Boy, he just got field shy when he saw the airport and ran back to Sha Tin.
Bubble Boy.
He looked up and said, this flight's going to Tokyo. That won't be happening. I won't be coming there.
Easier than shake and bake, you and Hong Kong horses. Bubble Boy just gets baked every single time by you.
What is interesting was the discussion that came up a couple of weeks ago about who is Australia's greatest jockey, and Zach Purton just keeps putting his hand up for this is globally speaking. I still think Damien Lane is the number one Australian. What he's been able to do in Hong Kong and back here with... Did he win all the majors or nearly all of them? But Zach Purton's knocking on the door.
Japan. No... He didn't win the Melbourne Cup. Japan is where he's been flying. Yesterday he was in the Japanese Oaks. We'll play at the finish. He ran... down the track, but the winner is a horse called Daring Tact, who has made it 3 from 3. If you missed the replay, go back and have a look, because it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, huge. And Daring Tact is launching her run late, finding the strut at the moment as Wind Mighty. Here comes the favourite, Daring Tact. 1, 2, 3, and back on the inside, it's Wind Maryland. They go to the line, it's going to be tight. Daring Tact wins from Wind Maryland. Wind Mighty, the winds get second and third.
Now, Daring Tact was the favourite. It was about $1.70. Sharky, it's run its last 600 and something ridiculous, and it was held up for a run for about 100 metres.
It's run its last 600 in 33.1.
Shit.
It's nearly broken 32 over 2,400 metres. They've run 224.4. The leader times for the last 600.
Can 11, they clock 2, them differently?
11.2, 11.8.
Do they clock them once they break into stride or something? Because Armadai ran 130 in a mile the other day. So, I mean, none of that makes sense.
12.3 from a standing start, then 11.1.
Speaking of Japanese horses.
Any chance of getting any of the Japanese out, do you think?
I still think we're a chance of getting European horses. Speaking to Paul Bloodworth and Lee Jordan and the like, I think we're still a chance, particularly the bigger teams like Godolphin. If they can't send staff, and that's a likelihood that our borders won't be open, the horses can still come. Why wouldn't Godolphin look at sending a team of horses and transferring them to James Cummings? They've done it in the past with one or two horses in a, you know, an advance party.
Or you just send, as you say, an advance party out, a few stable hands, 2 weeks
if
early.
If they can get into the country.
If you self-quarantine for 14 days, and then you're right to go.
I think a lot of the other complication is the how disjointed the season in Europe's going to be, and whether that makes it more difficult for them to prep off that and bounce
well,
into
Well, over the weekend, huge announcements for Royal Ascot, an extra 6 or 7 races, which is going to be an absolute bonanza to be watching. But they have said that the Ebor meeting and also... the other Newmarket, the name just escapes me, the July Cup Carnival, will be the same dates. So, therefore, the leading is going to be exactly the same as usual.
And as you say, it is not impossible for one group of people to deposit horses at one end and another group to receive them at the other. So I think we all got a little bit sort of ahead of ourselves with the Europeans aren't coming discussion.
Yeah.
There is certainly real... Exultant, thank you to Steve, did beat Liz Grosseau, so there is that sort of time.
Racing Post overnight, BHA are as incredibly confident that racing will be back on June 1, which is a great sign, because there's been a few, well, it's coming back, or no, it's not. So if they're confident, it's a great move forward.
Well,
yeah, can't wait for the flat season to kick off up there.
It just shows how well we've done, once again, to continue racing. And as far as we are concerned, I'm now starting to get a bit more confident that we will actually have some crowds during the carnival. If you've got Peter Volandis, who he may say what you think is some outrageous things, but he hasn't been wrong so far as the NRL is concerned. It starts on Thursday. He's declared he wants crowds back by July 1. Obviously capped crowds, and there'll be certain protocols and parameters put in place. The AFL is looking to bring back crowds.
At a grand final.
Now, it's a lot more confined space in a MCG or an NRL ground than what it is a racetrack. So if the NRL and the AFL are looking at that, and Josh Blanksby put out a tweet saying that the MRC and Racing Victoria and other clubs are working very hard on a structure where members and certain, I suppose, crowd numbers can return to the track, I can't see how that won't occur.
Well, isn't this now the biggest... When we're talking about should the carnival be pushed back, should there be a change that's a more long-term change? That it's all now down to if the crowds can come back and if they can't. That's what the date should hinge upon. If there's some degree of certainty that the first week of December is a yes and the first week of November is a probable no for crowds, that puts a lot of pressure back on the VRC to toe along with the other clubs.
Well, the only problem
in the idea
with
of a pushback
is I don't think there will be a... an announcement that far out.
Yeah.
And as you and your guys put together so well last week, and we'll play a snapshot of Josh Blanksby, the thoughts from Lee Jordan and Michael Browell as to what they are going to do with the Spring Carnival. The problem is they need to make this decision in the next 2 to 3 weeks for trainers and owners. Crowd announcements probably won't be made that quickly. If you missed it, it was a great show with Maddie last Tuesday. This is a snapshot about what the race club leaders had to say about what their thoughts are for this year's upcoming Spring Carnival.
Yeah, Matt, it'd be remiss of all sort of sporting administrators not to look at every sort of scenario and option at the moment. We're in unprecedented times with coronavirus and how it's all going to work, and a packed sporting schedule towards the end of the year with or without crowds. So we've been looking at all the options, and to summarise probably the three main ones is obviously just the status quo, and we play on and see how we are with crowds and clashes that would occur with other sports. We could move the whole carnival back 4 weeks, but the VRC have ruled that out, and I understand they're completely their understanding when they made that comment over the weekend. Or there's the third option, which is we flip and we sort of move, maybe certain races, including the Caulfield Cup Carnival and possibly the Coxlade Carnival after Flemington.
I think we've been pretty consistent all the way along, and maybe the Victoria Racing Club is a little bit different in that, we rely on, different revenue streams. I suppose all clubs do, but, we get tens of millions of dollars for our broadcast rights, both domestic and internationally. Obviously the same in sponsorship revenue, same with our corporate partners, tens of millions through our members, and we've got a very big members base, 30,000 plus, and even our general admission when we're running full up on the carnival. So there's a lot of money involved in revenue for that 4 days. And also we'd have to be sure that if we went back a month that those revenue streams, which are vital to the club, aren't impacted in a negative way, and in fact they'd want to be going in a positive way.
The AFL, they're obviously working to a 17-game season now. They've had one game already, 16 remaining. They're planning on a four-week finals campaign, each game or each round a week apart. So you're right, if all things go to plan and there's no hiccups, and that's a big if, the grand final would land on October 24. So I've been on record in recent weeks of saying we'd work with the AFL. If they were locked into a daytime grand final, we could run the Cox Plate at night. But also, too, if they were willing to consider a night grand final, then we'd be able to run the Cox Plate in its traditional time slot.
So that was Josh Blanksby from the MRC, Lee Jordan from the VRC, and Michael Brow from Moonee Valley. And listening last week to that show and the commentary and the subsequent chat, I get the impression that the MRC is probably the most willing to maybe play around and try something out of the ordinary. I think VRC is not going to move, no matter what, and Michael Brow at Moonee Valley is open, but I think quite likes the idea of having a grand final Cox Plate doubleheader on the same day, so it's unlikely they would move. Interesting, the debate and the talk. I know Wayne Hawkes was pretty strong. Let's move it, let's try it. I think David Hayes came out and said, let's have a crack as well, but my personal thought is I think it'll be thrown in the too hard basket because it is going to be a huge upheaval, and also it will impact on the autumn next year as well.
I like Jason Richardson's comments on racing.com. I think it was on After Last. He sort of ran through his template, and it also involved looking at the Oaks and the Derby and bringing them perhaps back to 2,000 metres. And why not? If you're going to move Group 1 races that have been established in certain positions,
absolutely,
and have wholesale change, why not make those changes?
It's great to have all of those changes, but I think such wide sweeping changes will be at board level, and everywhere else will be considered, look, you know what, this is just too much. We're going well as it is, let's just keep rolling through.
But are we going well?
Well, we're still racing.
Oh, we're still racing, of course, but can't you... Just because something's been done the same way forever doesn't mean doing it differently.
Oh, yeah, but to assume that something that has been successful for 150 years is somehow broken, but there's no real evidence that it's broken. There's a big risk in changing an institution that's been locked in with only vague rationale, I reckon.
In regard to Cup Week or in regard to the other races?
No, look, if you turn back the clock 150 years, you would be racing your peak races in November and early December. You would. That's where you'd start. You look at the weather, you look at the lack of other things going on, and you'd lock it in. But it hasn't been that way. You can't just sort of say, oh, that's where it should be, so let's transplant it. There's 150 years of root growth underneath it that holds it there, and that it's hard to sort of put a figure on what that's really worth until you take it away. So the other little observation I have is the AFL that this year the traditional threat that it's always been? If it's seen as a hokey Mickey Mouse cobbled together sort of thing that people are a little bit less entrenched with than they normally are with the AFL season, is it clashing with racing as big a diabolical situation for racing as it would normally be? Or is the footy a little bit compromised this year? Racing's got continuity and strength this year. It's a very localised carnival this year, and that's what people gravitate to. So, I mean, I worked in newspapers for 30 years, and I guarantee you that if the AFL and the racing were both on at the same time in the spring, racing would get a lot of traction and a lot of coverage. It wouldn't just be tossed out the bin in the mainstream newspapers. It would share that space, and it could actually work in a surprisingly good way. I know you doubt that, but...
Well, I've worked in the Seven newsroom for 10 years. Seven has a footy, Seven has racing. I can tell you categorically, racing would get very little coverage compared to what it would do if...
In a normal year.
There was no football on, and the football had finished compared to Spring Carnival. Exactly right.
Is it
if,
the owner?
If AFL and racing went head to head, no one in...
But is the
right
AFL as powerful this year?
100% it is.
Yeah. Is it as attractive this
year?
Have
a look at the paper today. Have a look at the news.
They've got to fill it up with something.
Exactly, but racing's going now.
Yeah, but racing's not in Carnival. No, but racing's not... It's not the Spring Carnival now. It's winter racing.
But there is no football.
To come back. Yeah,
there is no football. There will be a total blanket.
No, I don't think so, because I don't think it will actually work that way.
Compared to what it would get in a carnival with no racing, with no football, it will be totally blanketed.
Yeah, well, look, another...
On a Tuesday of Cox Plate Day, when you normally have the breakfast with the best, and unfortunately it won't be that this year, or who knows, maybe there'll be some crowds there, it's a whole week of back pages. It's a whole week of leading the news sports cycle. If that's the leading to the AFL Grand Final, there will be minimal coverage.
No, not if it is the institutions like Cup
Week. You might get a couple of pages on the Herald Sun, but it'll be six pages in, because the first five pages will be on who's playing the Grand
Final. Well, I think it would be interesting to have a chat to proprietors, like sports editors and things like that, to get their idea of how this may actually work out, because they're the ones that control the agenda. And the other thing, too, is it's not all about the Herald Sun, the Age, and one or two other entry points these days. There are so many different avenues in for people's
interests.
They're
the mainstream, though.
They are, but they're not as dominant as they once were.
Where are we with the rights update?
Well, haven't heard anything.
Any news there?
No, haven't heard anything. In regards to commercial, I think the way it's all tracking is that Seven will roll over and continue, but it's interesting that Channel 10 was offering to pay a lot of money, but it seems Racing Victoria's keen to stick with the incumbent despite the offer of more money, and it hasn't been, to my knowledge, and I'm not sure, put out to open tender, because you may get Nine or others involved as well.
Why wouldn't they put it out to open tender?
I'm not sure. We'll have to ask Racing Victoria that. And also, what's going on with the Queensland racing rights? Because we've been waiting to hear, is it Sky, is it .com?
So, didn't Sky roar into $1.30 favouritism?
Well, it was reported on RaceNet that they have agreed to a deal that hasn't been publicly announced for the BRC, which is the Metropolitan Meetings. So we're not sure what goes on with that. But these are all questions that can be asked, because the clock is ticking. It all ends on the end of the racing season.
Absolutely. Hey, I know it was remiss of me to say that we're out of season. There was the feature jumps racing at Sandown yesterday. I just found it hard to find yesterday. I mean, I know this is the city jumps racing thing, and on a Sunday has been a bit difficult to get traction in recent years. I still think it's got a Western Districts type theme and a home and a circuit and all sorts of stuff.
See, I disagree. I love seeing jumps racing at Sandown, and I love turning on yesterday and watching it.
It was great comments from Shane Jackson, actually, wasn't it, about when they went up the back and that the horses got the traction going up the hill and they leapt. That was the best leaps.
He's on Shane Jackson this season, isn't he?
He's Clark Kent.
He was calling it along. I spoke to him on Thursday for some, a bit of a preview for the website, and he was calling some of those rides a long way out. Bit of a lad. He basically walked me through how he was going to win the race, and it's exactly how it unfolded. So he has his eye in a serious way.
He, when I say Clark Kent, he's either standing there in a suit acting as Lindsay Smith's offsider with post-race interviews, or he's suddenly got his cape on as the superstar jumps jockey. Look, I think it's a good spectacle at Sandown, but I know what it had been like for 7 or 8 years when the crowds were allowed to go, and they simply didn't. It just wasn't on their radar to go to Metro, eastern side of town, jumps racing, and... I don't know. I mean, I don't have a strong opinion whether it's the pros outweigh the cons, but it just never seemed to... A lot of people wouldn't have really known that was on yesterday.
A couple of quick ones, because we're almost out of time. Michael Poy, just riding outstanding. He's going to win the Apprentice title again. And also, we speak about him all the time, but Lindsay Smith's impact since coming here has been immense. And to see him dominating in the winter with a double there as well, he's been huge. What does Craig Newitt do now? Is there any chance he would go back to Tasmania?
Why would he? I'm so happy for Craig Newitt. He's had a really tough couple of years, on and off, and he's a really good fella. He's flying. I don't think I've ever been happier to see a jockey in such good form because I know what it means to him. I think he's got his toe in the ground now. Why would you go?
We'll do more on Tasmania this week as well. We know that there are loyal listeners down there, but this is the impact that shutting down racing has. They're going to lose the best jockey they have. Most likely, because of the situation down there. It was good to see they did trial last Thursday, and you know, fingers crossed they do get back when they've basically said if they can get the health chief officer over the line on the 13th of July. But we're all counting down to that as well. What was the other thing I wanted to mention before we wrapped up this morning?
Sharks outfit?
No,
look, it's cobbled together in a hurry, right?
It was so one thing that slipped my mind.
Yeah, let's not harp too much on the outfit.
There's a couple of SMSs that are coming through as well. Hey, boys, are you able to chase up on what is going on with Sky 2 being available? Now, this is a good point because I did want to talk about this too. The TAB situation in New South Wales, they're opening up on Thursday. I texted Adam Hamilton last night. He said at this stage in Victoria, the reopening of the TAB outlets has not been decided because New South Wales opened up a lot quicker than Victoria. He said they're meeting today. Hopefully we'll have more information on that as well. And there's another SMS, someone saying that they haven't had a bet because they don't have an account and they're waiting for the actual TAB outlets to open up as well. If we do get someone on from the TAB and Sky, I'll ask that question about Sky 2 as well.
Beauty.
Out of time, gents. Matty, well done last week. Thank you for filling the void. It is good to be back. Sharky, good to see you as well.
And you, Michael.
It's a beautiful day.
It is. Swim for you and out in the tinny for you. We'll have fish.
I'm into the office today.
Listeners, don't go anywhere. It might have been a tough weekend, but I do know Warren Huntley is confident that we'll find all the winners coming up at Echuca.